We all know political discussions can easily become heated and emotional. But would you think differently about them if you knew your political rival has a genetic predisposition to view the world differently than you? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we ask whether a person's politics can be explained through biology. We'll hear two perspectives from academia, John Alford of Rice University in Houston and Evan Charney of Duke. And we'll talk with the chairs of the Iowa GOP and the Iowa Democrats. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and it's Wednesday. That means it's Politics Day. But today, with a different focus than our usual exhilarating analysis of recent goings-on, should I say. Instead, today, we're exploring the origins of political ideology. Here's what I mean. We all know political discussions can easily become heated and emotional. We've probably all been involved in those kinds of things. But would you think differently about a political tussle that you get into if you knew that your political rival has a genetic predisposition to a worldview that is different than yours? Well, later in the program, we'll talk to the chairs of the Iowa GOP and the Iowa Democrats. A.J. Spiker, Tyler Olson will join us, asking them what they think of this idea and how they came to their political thinking. Also, ISU political scientist Dave Peterson will join us. But first, what we know and what we don't know about how biology may play a part in a person accumulating particular political ideas. And joining us first of all to do that, John Alford. He's an associate professor of political science at Rice University in Houston. John Alford, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
And I understand you did some graduate work at the University of Iowa.
I received my PhD at the University of Iowa, so it's great to be back in Iowa, even if only in voice.
All right. We'll enjoy you thoroughly that way. You and others have co-authored articles using results from studies, I understand, that look into this very question that I've raised. Tell us, what studies have been done in this area?
Well, there are really a series of studies, and I think some of those are twin studies or related studies that look simply at the degree to which we would estimate that there is a heritable component to ideology. And those studies tend to show that, in fact, ideology does have a large heritable component. And then in addition, there are studies that look more at physiology, and those studies also find that ideology has a physiological understructure. It's supported by a physiology that's different across different individuals. And taken together, I think they're fairly convincing demonstration that, as is true for many other characteristics, personality, things like that, that you know, real liberals and real conservatives are born that way.
Okay, let's take the two study categories that you mentioned and have you tell us a little bit more about them. Heritable, how does that get tested? What studies in particular have been done that convince you the most?
A range of twin studies, and these include multiple twin studies in the United States, twin studies in Australia, some more recent twin studies coming out of Europe, all show that the similarity of adult MZ or identical twins in terms of political ideology is substantially greater than the ideological similarity of DZ or what are sometimes called fraternal twins, non-identical twins.
And these are twins who did not grow up together.
There is a small study of twins that did not grow up together, but most twin studies are twins that did grow up together. Mm.
So how do we know that's not just, you know, parents passing on the way they see the world and the way they see politics?
What's interesting about twins is really not so much MZ twins, which people tend to focus on, the ones who are genetic clones, but instead the DZ twins. DZ twins are just siblings. They're no more related genetically to each other than any two other siblings, but they're siblings born at the same time. And so when we compare the similarity of DZ twins as adults to the similarity of MZ twins, if we find that MZ twins are much more similar in political beliefs as adults, then we have an example. What we're comparing there are our siblings who were raised at the same time by the same parents in the same environment. And somehow all of that environmental pressure to be similar doesn't produce the same level of similarity in DZ twins as it does in MZ twins.
Mm. Okay. Let's move on and give us a quick overview of the physiological component of these studies. I understand this has to do with measuring people's threat response.
We measure threat response. We've done some work on disgust response as well. And the idea here is that if, in fact, you are born predisposed in terms of ideology, then that predisposition has got to be built into a biological system, presumably part of the nervous system, and that then exhibits itself not as a gene for liberalism or conservatism, but for a brain physiology that's modified in ways that makes you more susceptible maybe to a conservative position or a liberal position. One of the first things we looked at is threat response. We find that conservatives are more responsive to startle, for example, an auditory startle. We just play a sudden burst of white noise in headphones. Conservatives have a stronger biological response to that, and they also are more responsive to threats in presented as pictures.
Mm-hmm. For those who can't make the connection, make the connection of why a startle response would, in this theory, equate with being more conservative in your views.
Well, it's interesting because it does not relate to conservatism across the board. So it doesn't relate to, for example, wanting to have a smaller federal budget, and it doesn't relate to your opinion on gay marriage. But it does relate to your opinion in areas related to national defense, protection of borders, views toward out-groups, immigration views. So the idea there is that for someone who experiences threat more viscerally, the idea of being focused on protective policies might make sense. Liberals don't appear to actually perceive threat very viscerally. Certainly visual threat, they have very little visceral perception of threat. I think conservatives often think this about liberals, that liberals just don't get it, mm-hmm. in the sense that they don't understand. There was a early dispute about Obama wanting to meet with Castro. This idea that the Democrats might be willing to sit down and talk to enemies and not appear to be threatened by that situation is something that where conservatives believe that this is the kind of rose-colored glasses notion about liberals that come from a conservative point of view, whereas conservatives are simply more attuned to the fact that there are real threats in the environment.
So while we're not saying, it's as simplistic as saying that one day we might discover genes that cause a person to lean Republican or Democratic, are you saying that?
We're having a really hard time finding the genes that control height, and we know that height is 90% heritable and is a basic, just simple physiological property. So I think we're a long way. If there even were such a thing as a gene that controls ideology, which I don't believe there is, we would be a long way away from understanding the complex interaction of genes, epigenetic properties, and sort of early development. Mm-hmm. We're nowhere close to that. That's why we really don't use the twin studies as an intro into doing genetic studies, but rather just as a kind of proof of concept for looking at these physiological properties.
Having studied this, and let's put it in the form of a pie chart, we can visualize a pie chart, and let's say in that pie chart are all the things that make up an individual's political thinking, and broadly speaking, we have the environment as a huge part of it, I would assume, your upbringing, your nurture. How much of a slice are you going to give to heritable components, physiological components, based on what you know?
Well, I'll say that there's not, at this moment, any scientific answer to that question. We don't know the proportion, but I will say this. Traditionally, the biological piece of that pie has been zero. That entire pie has been, everyone knows that they're political because they were raised in a particular environment and that they thought certain ways about things or maybe even some really persuasive professor they had in a political science class in college. So we've always said that the pie was all environmental, either shared or unique. And so my basic argument is just I want a pie, a recognizable slice of that pie to be biology. And then my best guess is that when we add the part that sort of creates kind of similar genetic leanings to the part of our epigenetic heritage that makes us contributes to our uniqueness, the unshared part of our genetics, even among identical twins. My guess is that roughly half that pie is biological and half's environmental.
Okay. John Alford is Associate Professor of Political Science at Rice University in Houston, Texas. Did his PhD work at the University of Iowa, joining us today to talk about this. And we want to have you, our listeners, join in this conversation. Where did your political beliefs come from? Do you give any bit of the pie, if we're talking about in terms of a pie chart, to a genetic predisposition? What does your gut tell you? What does your head tell you? What does your experience tell you? Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, where you can post a question or a comment, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Now joining us, Evan Charney is with us, Associate Professor of Practice of Public Policy and Political Science, also a fellow at Duke's Institute for Brain Sciences, that's in Durham, North Carolina, joining us by phone. His article, Genopolitics and the Science of Genetics, is appearing in the next issue of the American Political Science Review. Evan Charney, welcome to our program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you on the phone joining our discussion. You've been listening in, I assume, to what John Alford has been saying, and you're well acquainted with it because you've written several articles criticizing his studies, his analysis, along with the co-authors. What in particular are your criticisms?
Well, I'm a skeptic of several of the studies he just mentioned and the methodologies, and I would like to begin with the assumption that political orientations or political belief systems are heritable. And I would just like to point out a couple of things. When you ask the question about a pie and how much of that pie one would ascribe to, say, heritability, that's a misunderstanding of what the concept of heritability is and what the concept of heritability measures. If someone says that, say, being a liberal is 50% heritable, that does not mean that 50% of any individual's political beliefs is caused by genes, or that one is 50% more likely to be a liberal. Heritability is a population estimate. It does not apply to individuals. Heritability refers to the amount of variation in a trait in a population at a given time that can be ascribed to genetic as opposed to environmental causes. It tells us nothing about individuals. It doesn't even tell us that the trait that we're studying is due to genes, because there can be a difference between what causes variation in a trait and what causes the trait itself. So that's the first point I would like to make. The second point concerns twin studies. I think twin studies are a completely confounded and unreliable methodology. They're basically unchanged since they were first developed in the late 19th century by Sir Francis Galton, and our understanding about a lot of things has changed since then. But I want to point out one particularly troubling, confounding feature about twin studies. It's well known that identical twins are treated more alike than non-identical twins. They're dressed in the same clothing by their parents, they're given stupid rhyming names, they're often tend to be treated alike by their friends and parents, they tend to have closer relationships. So there are all these environmental reasons why we would expect identical twins to be more alike than non-identical twins. And all of these greater trait concordances that people ascribe to genes could be, and I would say most likely are, due to environment. Mm. By the way, one other thing, I think we have to get away from talking about identical twins, because we now know that identical twins are not genetically identical, but that's another issue.
Okay. Evan Charney, because of our limited time, we have yes, less than 10 minutes left.
Okay.
If you had other criticisms, please air them, explain them, and then I wanted John Alford a chance to respond to what you've just said.
Okay. Okay. Very briefly, studies showing, for example, that conservatives have a greater blink reflex, and this shows that conservatives have more, I don't know if they're more fearful of certain things or more responsive to negative stimuli. If I could read a quote from the renowned psychologist Kagan, an exaggerated blink reflex to an aversive stimulus might, under some conditions and in some individuals, index the state of anxiety, but the magnitude of this reflex considered alone is not sufficient to infer a particular emotional state, especially one as general as negative affect. So I think that the conclusions of studies that state, for example, that conservatives have a greater startle blink reflex, therefore they have a greater fear response, are very questionable, because it's not clear, and we don't know exactly what these differences in responses mean. And as has been pointed out, these differences in responses do not apply across the board, so that one could consistently say, well, you know, conservatives have a greater startle blink response than liberals. They only apply to certain particular attitudes. And I think what's going on is that researchers are picking and choosing and saying, well, look, conservatives have a greater startle blink response to it when they believe in this particular issue mm-hmm. attitude or that particular
issue. So are you saying, Professor Charney, that this is sort of another form of a liberal bias in academia?
Okay, let me give you an example of what I believe is a liberal bias in academia. There's a lot of talk about the relationship between liberalism and conservatism and personality. And a lot of people hypothesize that, well, maybe personality traits are heritable, and therefore there's an association between a personality trait and whether one is a liberal or conservative. And one often hears about the trait of openness to experience, which comes from something called the five-factor model of personality, which is a widely used indicator of personality. Okay, there have been studies published showing that liberals are more open to experience. If you look at the five-factor personality model test, one of the questions under the values section is as follows. I believe that laws and social policies should change to reflect the need of a changing world. If you answer this question yes, your openness to experience score goes up. If you answer this question no, your openness to experience score goes down.
Okay.
So in other words, the relationship between openness to experience and liberalism is built into the test. It's circular. I could read every mm-hmm. one of the so-called value items on this test express conservative versus liberal views.
Okay.
And if you answer yes, I agree with that, your openness to experience score for the conservative answer goes down.
Evan Charney, thank you for that example. We're running out of time. I want to make sure we get back to John Alford. A lot of points of criticism raised there by Evan Charney. John Alford, take a chance to respond to those.
Well, just briefly, I would say that the twin method is old. It's not as old as Francis Galton. He studied twins but did not, in fact, use the twin method because he did his work before we actually knew there were such a thing as MZ and DZ twins. But it is an old method. It has been in use for over 100 years. And a conservative might respond to that and say, well, okay, so because something has been in continuous use and valuable for 100 years, it must be bad. I think it might be actually a testament to what a good method it is. And I noticed that Evan also doesn't like the way psychologists measure personality and a whole lot of other things.
Mm.
All of what he says all that could be wrong. All that could be faulty, and that could be leading to our false understanding, our modern understanding that a lot of human behavior is heritable. I guess that is a possibility, but I think the increasing weight of evidence across a wide variety of human tastes is that there are strong heritable components, and I do think twin studies are a reliable way of estimating that.
Okay.
And I think that's a healthy thing. I don't think it's a liberal or a conservative thing. I just think it's a healthy thing. I think we're a better country for accepting that people who are left-handed weren't just under the sway of the devil or bad teaching or poor parenting. And I think as up-to-date as the recent Supreme Court discussion, this is an issue that Justice Scalia was raised, the issue of is, in fact, homosexuality something that's inborn, or is it the result of sort of how you've been persuaded? And I think we see there's a substantial shift in opinion on that in the United States.
Evan Charney, I wanted to ask you, if you find, which you certainly feel that these studies, this methodology is flawed in getting to this, do you have a better way forward, or are you ruling out any heritable or physiological component to political thinking.
Right. See, I mean, the thing is, I can't answer a negative question like that because, you know, I mean, I can't rule out that there's like a 500-pound golden Santa Claus buried under Antarctica. I mean, the question is there compelling scientific evidence for such a claim? And what I would say is no. The burden of proof is on those who are proposing that there is a genetic basis for something like a political ideology. And my claim is simply, I do not see the evidence for that. Mm-hmm. I do not see compelling evidence for that. You know, my objection to the twin study methodology is not that it's been enduring. And your guess is absolutely right that the difference between monozygotic twins and dizygotic twins was discovered in the 1920s, and the first sort of modern, quote, twin study was around 1925. But I think this study is very problematic, and I think that we should be very cautious in making claims like that.
Okay, John Alford, before we have to go, how long has this question been looked at in academia? Why is it coming to the fore now?
It actually, for people doing these kinds of studies outside of political science, it's not particularly new. The first studies were published in the 1980s, so there is a fairly long, by social science standards, a fairly long tradition of findings that ideology is heritable. But it's only recently been something that's been popular as a research topic in political science, and that I think the public has actually begin to hear about and think about this possibility that their political beliefs run much deeper than just their life experience. So you do get ideology from your parents. So we've always known that. We just didn't know how early that transmission took place.
Okay, and before we have to go, we have less than a minute. Where do you think this debate is headed? What needs to be found out? What are the crucial studies that you think will answer it?
I think as we move forward in improving our understanding of epigenetics, which really is work for biologists to do, I think we'll be able to clarify some of these relationships. And I think as we get a broader set of studies, and particularly look more carefully, we've tried to look carefully at issues like those raised by Evan about MZ twins being treated more similar. So we looked at whether ideology is more similar in twins that are treated more similarly, and we find that that's not the case. So I think there's a good deal of research to filling this out and to understanding how the perceptual world of conservatives differs from the perceptual world of liberals. But I'm confident that we'll make progress there, and I'm confident that it will establish that, in fact, we are born primarily to be liberal or conservative or moderate.
Okay, John Alford of Rice University in Houston, Texas, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Evan Charney, thank you for joining us from Duke's Institute for Brain Sciences in North Carolina. We appreciate your perspective.
Thank you. Thank you.
And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion. Also, Tyler Olson, Iowa Democratic Party Chair, A.J. Spiker, Iowa Republican Chair, will join us along with Dave Peterson, political scientist from ISU. We'll continue this discussion. Where did your political beliefs come from? Do you think there's a genetic component? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. While the U.S. Supreme Court is having a divisive and historic week, hearing two cases concerning same-sex marriage, we've been hearing about it on NPR, the Iowa Supreme Court is also grappling with major issues that will affect the way Iowans, we here in Iowa, live, love, and work. Tomorrow on this program, I'll be talking with University of Iowa Law School professors Song Richardson and Todd Pettis, as well as legal blogger and litigator Ryan Koopmans. They'll tell us about four high-profile cases that have been heard this session in our state's highest court. You want to tune in for that tomorrow. Politics Wednesday, a different sort of Politics Wednesday today. In just a moment, we'll be joined by the chairs of the Iowa GOP and Iowa Democrats. A.J. Spiker and Tyler Olson will be with us to talk about how they came to their political beliefs. It's sort of part of the idea this hour to talk about where our political beliefs come from anyway. Is it all about nurture, your upbringing, mentors, life circumstances? Or could it, a small part of it anyway, be your nature, even a genetic predisposition? Join our discussion about what you think about the arguments you heard last half hour. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us, first of all, before we do get to our the chairs of the major parties here in Iowa, Dave Peterson joins us in our Ames studio. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Ben.
Dave is a professor of political science at Iowa State University, part of our politics gang on Wednesday, also interim director of the Harkin Institute of Public Policy at ISU. I assume you had your ears perked for that last half-hour discussion. What are your thoughts on this debate, the environment and heritable ideology?
I haven't actually done any work in the field. I've read a lot of the literature, and I've sort of kept up on the research in the area. And I think the answer is, not surprisingly, somewhere in between your two guests. Alford is one of the best people in this area. He's done some of the groundbreaking work that got a lot of attention, in part because it's splashy and it's interesting, and in part because there are some places where, as Evan Charney pointed out, they might have overstated their claims a little bit. On the other hand, I think Charney is cherry picking some problems that he's grappling with, and I think the preponderance of evidence is more that there is some heritability or some genetic sources of political behavior, political opinions, political identities. I mean, mm-hmm. We know that there's a lot of stuff that makes us up that are influenced by our genes, right? We know that our genes affect our personality. We know that our genes affect lots of different things about us. It's not simple relationships, and it's not deterministic relationships, but it gives us a propensity to have these beliefs and these ideas. And I'd at this point be more surprised if there wasn't a link than if there was.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, even fascinating, to think about the implications if this does science continues to or does show this connection, this heritable ideology, physiological evidence of a predisposition. The implications that has for political discussions, do you think about that? I mean, that you can stand, that this in some way may be an attribute like eye color, skin color, height.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to overstate that a little bit, in part because mostly what it does is it gives us a propensity towards, right? I think the analogy might be something like high blood pressure, right? We know that there are genetic roots to high blood pressure that make you more susceptible to having problems with your blood pressure. But we know that your diet and your exercise and a whole lot of other things are going to matter as well. And so, it's not a genetic determinism. Nobody believes that, your genes determine your politics. It's that they shape your politics, and that it makes you more likely to be liberal or conservative, or more likely to be engaged in politics or not engaged in politics. Our experiences, our mentors, our families, nurture, however whatever that actually means, obviously is going to have an effect. And in fact, there's going to be an interactive effect, right? So, our genes can make us more susceptible to the ways in which we interact with society. Mm-hmm. And so there are going to be times and places where it's
and then the more susceptible to certain ways the news media may approach us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm, interesting. Let's go to Tony in Des Moines. Tony called 1-866-780-9100. Tony, you've been listening. What are your thoughts on this debate?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I would argue that there wouldn't necessarily be a genetic trait that could be identified. There may be empirical observation that may show correlation, but various characteristics that are genetic-based may impact political leanings. And based upon what political leanings or social communities claim with respect to those genetic characteristics such as skin color, eye shape, sexual orientation, those can determine what people think of as political leaning.
Mm-hmm.
I lean liberal on some issues, and some I'm conservative on others. But life experience and reaction by society towards certain characteristics can impact how one views political efficacy or leanings. I would say at most you could claim a transitive nature to genetics with respect to leanings, but it would be difficult to segregate genetic features from other
characters. That's really, yeah, it is. It is a big tossed salad, Tony, and it would be hard to separate that. Thank you for your view, Tony, calling from Des Moines. Joining us now, the Iowa Republican Party Chair A.J. Spiker is with us in our Des Moines studio, also alongside Tyler Olson, the Iowa Democratic Party Chair. Welcome to you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Tyler, want to mention you're also a state representative. Your district covers parts of Cedar Rapids. A.J., former Iowa co-chair of Congressman Ron Paul's 2012 presidential campaign in Iowa. I hope I didn't leave out any part of your titles or your introductions there. We do appreciate you coming in to talk about this here, too. I want to start off, before I ask you your reaction to this debate that we've been having, I think you've heard most of it anyway. Let me start with you, A.J., and I'll ask you both this. Tell us about your upbringing and how you think it shaped your political thinking.
Well, I think several experiences throughout anybody's lifetime will impact how they, you know, react personally to situations and how they might be politically involved. And my personal upbringing, like many people, shaped how I view the world. And you know, I was raised in a home where we went to church every Sunday, and a lot of my values and beliefs really come from the idea that natural law really is what guides us as humans, and our rights come from our Creator, and that the government can't take away those rights.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a moment in your life you can look back to, AJ, where you can say that is an event, that is a moment that crystallized my beliefs, my conservative beliefs?
Well, I do, and I think for each different viewpoint, you're going to have different circumstances. But, you know, for me, when my wife and I had three children, and we lost three children, when you see the ultrasound and you see a baby, it really galvanizes the belief that life begins at conception and life is precious and that government should do everything it can to protect life from conception to natural death.
Mm-hmm. Tyler Olson, Iowa Democratic Party Chair, tell us about your upbringing, how you think it brought you where you are today in terms of political thinking.
Well, I don't know if there's any, you know, one experience, but I think a couple of things that were important in my family, or to my family, you know, I think kind of drive, you know, my process and where I am today. I grew up in a household that ran a small business, and you know, the value system there was that the success of that business was due to the folks that worked there, and it was really important to have an educated workforce, a healthy workforce, and that, you know, that enriches the whole community. I was born and raised in Cedar Rapids and went to George Washington Senior High School, which is a pretty diverse school. And, you know, it was clear to me that, you know, folks there, kids there, came from a lot of different backgrounds. And, you know, what they were all looking for and what I believe that everyone should have is an opportunity. You know, we obviously don't guarantee outcomes in the state, but it's important that everybody have access to the same opportunities.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Have you both weigh in on this? Tyler Olson, you first, please. What do you think of this idea that there could be a heritable or a physiological component to our political ideologies as individuals that can be passed on and not through the nurturing or the mentoring or the experiences in a church or so forth, or in a business, Tyler?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's fascinating. I mean, I don't know much about genetics and the science and how, you know, I listened obviously to the first part about how something like that could be studied, but it's really interesting. I grew up in a household where my mom was a registered Democrat and my dad for a long time was a registered Republican. So, you know, I don't know if that means my mom's genes were stronger or not, and my dad has for a while been a Democrat, but. You know, I tend to think, and maybe it's just because it's what I understand, you know, that nurture probably plays a large role, and the experiences that we all have to a greater extent maybe than the genes we're born with.
Mm-hmm. A.J. Spiker, you heard, I think, some of that debate we had last half hour. What's your reaction? For instance, one of the studies claiming, you know, people seeing images that would invoke a threat response, photos of a spider, a person's face, other things, and that people with more conservative views have a stronger threat response.
You know, I would just say that I'm not a genetics researcher. And so it's hard for me to comment on something like that, but I believe it's possible. But as far as would genetics play a role, would environment play a role, I would expect environment would play a larger role.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know enough about the science to really give a good answer.
I wonder, when you sit across from each other, as you're doing at our studio in Des Moines, how you view each other in political terms. AJ, how do you explain that, you know, Tyler has a whole host of other ways of seeing issues and coming down on political decisions?
Well, I think that's what makes Americans unique and special in the world, is we can sit next to each other, disagree on things, and we both care about people.
Mm-hmm.
We both care about our country and our state, but we disagree on some things. And that, at the end of the day, should help make, you know, a stronger nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but why do we disagree on these things, I guess? Why would you say he came out at a different result than you did?
Well, you know, we're all created unique, and we all have different beliefs, mm-hmm. and we all develop different beliefs. You know, who you room with at college or your parents. You have people who, you know, maybe their parents are too liberal, and their child becomes a hardcore conservative, and vice versa. So I think there's a whole host of reasons that people are different.
Okay. And Tyler Olson, when you look across the aisle to see AJ or others, how do you explain why they see things differently?
Well, you know, I've talked to AJ now a good amount since I was elected chair, and also in my experience in the legislature, obviously work with a lot of people that have different views on a lot of the big picture issues, you know. But I think once you kind of move off of particular issues and start talking about values and kind of where we see the state headed, there are actually a lot of similarities. And the difference then comes down to more how we get there. You know, how do we make sure that folks have access to healthcare? How do we make sure that you know, we have a high quality education system that serves all of Iowa's kids? And you know, I just think a lot of it comes from different backgrounds. You know, communities across the state, even though we're not a particularly large state, you know, we obviously have different sizes of communities, and the character in each one of those communities is a little bit different. So, you know, I really think that, you know, we're all kind of headed in the same direction, and we probably disagree some about maybe how we get there. But that's one of the things I've really been, you know, pleasantly surprised at in the legislature, is that, you know, we're willing to set aside some of those differences to move things forward.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about this hour. Our guests, Tyler Olson of the Iowa Democratic Party chair, and A.J. Spiker, Iowa Republican Party chair, finishing up our discussion this hour about where our political beliefs come from, if there could be a heritable or physiological component to that. We've been asking our listeners to chip in on that question as well. This is an email from Julia, who's listening. Some of her comments, not the entire email, but she writes, experiencing Watergate affected her perspective. And she says, then the hostage crisis started, and I was very shocked to see other students harassing and threatening these Iranian kids, all of whom were from families that were friendly to the Shah's regime and thus to the U.S., that showed me that many Americans could be very ignorant about the rest of the world, and that their ignorance was destructive. Thank you, Julia. An edited form of your email for time consideration. Let's go to James. James joining us from Des Moines. What's on your mind? Not much time, James, but tell us what's on your mind.
I think nature plays very little in our political beliefs. Nurture and Malou are the controlling examples. I was churched and attended church in several denominations. But the one true thing that rang through all of them was that Christ threw out the money changers out of the temple. He came to minister to the poor and not take advantage of them. He didn't believe in charging interest to the poor when they borrowed money. I don't understand how AJ can endorse the accumulation of vast amounts of wealth, like most Republicans, in the face of the fact that Christ said it's going to be harder for a rich man to enter heaven than it is for a camel to go through the eye of a needle.
Okay, James, thank you for that viewpoint. We'll have A.J. Spiker respond.
No, I think that's a great question. And Christ did throw out the money changers. And in the economy we have now, we have a system where, through inflation, we're stealing from poor people and hardworking families. So we have the money changers going on right here, right now in this country. And it really comes down to, when we're talking about, you know, helping the needy, the poor, what is the role of government and what is not the role of government? And I believe that social justice in a Christian teaching is something that involves an act of charity. And I don't believe that the government can take money from one group and give it to another group and have that be charity. So therefore, I don't see that as social justice. I think real social justice occurs when people see people who have a need and they fulfill that need. And also with Catholic, Methodist, Lutheran hospitals, they regularly took care of the poor. And they regularly had money to do those things. And it's only in recent years, as we have given more and more to the government and really given government the role in charity, that we have these problems. And I think if we went back to folks donating and contributing and funding these projects, you would have a lot more charity in this country, and there would be a lot more goodwill in this country.
Okay, let's go to Brad in Bettendorf. Brad, coming to the end of our hour, but what do you want to chip in?
Yeah, well, just wanted to offer, I'm the son of an agnostic father. He was a history major and master, Korean War, Air Force colonel, decorated, whatnot. So when I asked him one day how he justified living a moral life, I was expecting he was going to give me the perspective of knowing history and having sinned more and all that. But instead, I was surprised by his response, which was, just got lucky with the genes.
There's not a doubt
in my mind that that's exactly right, but just wanted to share that.
You think, Brad, that was more than just a flip answer, that he actually believes that there was something passed on physiologically?
Well, I believe his answer was, quickly said, but well thought.
Okay.
Yeah, that he truly believed that it's just all a matter of the luck of the roll of the dice. He got the lucky genes, that he turned out to be one who was moderate in his actions and deliberate in his thoughts, and it could have certainly gone differently had he gotten the different genes.
Okay.
But having a Catholic mother as well sort of leads to some interesting discussions over the years, but. Okay. Leave that for another day.
Okay, thank you, Brad, for calling from Bettendorf. An email from Ryan we can squeeze in before we end our discussion. This is from Ryan. When I was a teenager, a series of events happened that made me question the socially conservative ideas I've been raised with. My ideas and values began to change by the time I left for college. I was a heterosexual president of my university's LGBT group. I'm lucky to have a family that talks even if we disagree. And over the years of talking, my parents have moved to liberal perspectives on almost every topic. My mother has a Planned Parenthood and Human Rights Campaign sticker on her car. My father wears a T-shirt that simply says liberal in the middle of the chest. If political leanings are genetically determined, writes Ryan, it's certainly not evident from the experience of my family. Okay, we have a few seconds left. A.J. Spiker, or anything to say quickly before we thank you and leave this discussion for now?
Well, I think it's a great discussion, and talking about where our values, where our political beliefs come from, I think are very important to the discussion going on with several of the issues. And it gives us some perspective on where people come from with their views. But ultimately, I think that that the environment people live in probably has a greater impact, and the things that they see every day and live through.
Tyler Olson, quickly.
Well, a lot of it is environment, but I think it's also important that we also are able to put ourselves in other people's shoes. I mean, we all grow up in a certain way with values and a value system that we get from different places. You know, the key then is how do you relate to other folks that have had different experiences and maybe a different value system.
Very good. Tyler Olson, AJ Spiker, we want to thank you very much for joining us this half hour and taking the trouble to come into our studio.
Thank you, Ben.
River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Technical support from Dennis Reese and Ames. Help from Garrett Van Leeuwen in Des Moines. Help from John Pemble. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is produced as a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.